Ahoy!
Welcome to another episode of People Seek Meeple, the board game problem solvers.
Featuring myself, Will Brotherson.
And myself, Shalene Scott.
We are both the features of this podcast.
And we're both here and ready to talk to you about board games.
And where are we today?
We're at home. It's kind of weird.
We're just sitting in a new flat. It's all ours. No one else lives here. We moved 2 days before Christmas Day, and it was a gosh darn fun time.
It went pretty smoothly, actually.
It wasn't terrible, but we normally record at Counterculture, but they are closed over the holidays, so we have brought you into our sacred place.
Because we says to ourselves, can we skip an episode over the holidays? And we says no to ourselves. We says we can't skip an episode. We don't want to let down our fans. Do we have any fans?
If you are a fan, send us an email or comment on the subreddit. But yeah, do that. Come on, fans.
Reach out. We need more questions to answer. So, here at People Seek Meeple, we give you personalized board game recommendations.
No way.
Way. You send us questions, like some of the really good questions that we got today that we're going to answer. And then we will answer them by recommending board games. And doesn't matter what it is. The answer is a board game. To send us a question, you can email us at peopleseekmeeple@gmail.com or post a message on the aforementioned subreddit at r/peopleseekmeeple. Question one is from Martian Flame. I'm going to be taking an honors colloquium next semester at my university, and one of the requirements is that we bring a three-player game to the first meeting. The professor would prefer it if they were three-player only games, as the point of the colloquium is, later on, to try to make a balanced three-player game. They would prefer if it was under 3 hours to play, and they're happy with either competitive or cooperative.
Well, Martian Flame, I suggest to you a wonderful little game called The King is Dead, which is a re-theme, re-implementation of an old game called König von Siam, or The King of Siam, which is a three-player game where there are three factions vying for control of England in Arthurian England or something along those lines. However, you don't control a particular faction. You control all of the factions, and you're basically hoping that the faction that you invest the most into turns out winning. But investing them means taking them off of the board and adding them to your supply. So the more that you want a team to win, the less they're actually present on the board. It's a really, really fun little mechanic. Everyone has the same 13 actions that they can each do once over the course of the entire game, and that might be moving some dudes around or swapping some dudes over. There is one really fun thing, and that is if people keep tying for control over territories, it instead goes to the Vikings, and if enough of the Vikings take over the world, then there's a completely different endgame win condition, which I thought was a lot of fun. It can play 2 or 4 players, but it is made quite specifically for 3 players. Like, if you play with 2 or 4, like, if you play in 4, I think you have to play in teams. If you play with 2, it changes the rules quite significantly. Like, it is a 3-player game, and it is a dang good time. The King is Dead is a game by Pierre Sylvester and published by Osprey Games, and you should check it out.
Great. I struggled to find a game that was specifically built for 3 players that wasn't a card game or a trick-taking game or something like that. It sounded like you wanted a board game. My recommendation for you would be to use a game that people widely agree plays best at 3 players and to isolate the reasons that it plays best at 3. I'm sure this was part of your game plan already, but I am just confirming that you have really good ideas. I saw that you had Terraforming Mars on your list, and I think that's a really good one to look at because there are plenty of mechanics working in different ways and lots of different ways to approach that game. I don't need to tell you all about it because you already know it. But another one that I thought, as Terraforming Mars is an engine builder, Viticulture is a worker placement game and might be another good one to add to your analysis. I have played it quite a few times at various player counts. I did not like the really high player counts, definitely. It just starts to drag a little bit. I think it's fairly obvious why playing with, 6?
Yeah, 6.
With 6 is not the best. It takes quite a while to reach your turn again, especially if you're playing with people who don't know the game. I would also agree with these so-called people that Viticulture doesn't play best at 2. It's good. It's still a good game. It's always a good game. But playing with three, there's a little more variation. There's a little more... Well, you know what? I'm going to leave that up to you to figure out what there's a little more of.
I would be really interested, actually, if you manage to sort of isolate the things that make it a really good three-player game. We would love to hear back from you on that sort of thing. And also, I'm very interested to play the game that you end up creating. So, you know, keep us posted on that.
Good question.
Yeah, we really liked that one. I don't know if we helped that much, but I think Will definitely helped. I'm not sure if this was helpful, but I enjoyed thinking about it.
Great.
Look forward to hearing from you.
All right. Okay, now, fellas. Question two is from Chaos Ensues 75, and they are asking for game recommendations to play with seniors with dementia, preferable in the under 60 minute range. Then they end their question with a question. Any ideas?
Sure, I got one.
Actually, how could someone end a question with an answer?
Yeah. Okay, I got an idea. King Domino, designed by Bruno Cathala and published by Blue Orange Games. It was Game of the Year in 2016, so you know it's good.
Some real attitude there.
It sounded sarcastic the way that I said it, but it really is a good game. The rules are fairly simple, and there aren't too many different mechanics to wrap your head around. It's a tile placement game where you're building a 5x5 grid around a castle. The way that you get tiles is through a drafting mechanic. Each tile has a number on the back, and the better the tile is, objectively speaking, the lower down the row of tiles it's going to be. You have access to four tiles each round. The way that you get the tile is by placing one of your...
The little king meeples.
The king meeples.
Yeah.
You'll have two king meeples in a two-player game, but one if you're playing with three or four. You place your king meeple on the tile that you'd like to take, which will then determine how early you go in the next round. So if you're always taking the best tiles, you can't probably always be taking the best tiles because you're not going to go first on the next round. The reason that some of the tiles are better than other tiles is because some of the tiles have crowns on them, and crowns are the only thing that let you score points. The goal of the game is to group together similar tile types. So I want all of my wheat fields to be in contact with each other and all of my forests to be together. But they're only going to score if I have a crown or two in the forest. Let's say that I've built a forest section that is 5 squares all connected together, and I have 2 crowns in that section. My crowns are multiplied by the number of tiles in the section, so that little section of forest would score me 10 points at the end of the game. The more crowns that you can get into each section, the higher you'll score. I think the trickiest rule is that your grid cannot exceed 5x5, so you have to make sure that when you place a tile down, it's not going out of that box. Your castle doesn't always need to be in the middle of your grid. It could be on the outside. It doesn't matter where in your grid it is. Nothing can exceed this 5x5 set of dimensions that we're given to work with. Unless you play a two-player game, then you can play with a 7x7. Which is also a fun challenge. I'm not sure how many seniors you're playing with at any given time, but if they like this game, some of them may want to take on the 7x7 challenge. That is King Domino.
My suggestion is a fairly well-known game called Ganz Schön Clever by Wolfgang Warsch and published by Schmidt Spiel. And it is a lovely little roll-and-write game in which you are trying to get this, the most points.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. So the basic idea is pretty straightforward. You've got a sheet of paper and you're crossing off different things on the sheet of paper by using dice of different colors. You throw the dice, you choose the one you want to keep, but if you keep choosing the best dice, then you miss out on rolling the other ones. So you are kind of forced to take the crappy ones sometimes so that you can keep having turns. The reason why I thought it would work quite well with seniors is that everything on the sheet is quite well labeled. Like, you know, on the purple scoring section, there is a greater than symbol for everything. So you know if you roll a 2 and a 2 is there, the next thing you roll has to be greater than a 2. It's easy to learn. You can sit down and teach how to play the game in maybe like 10-15 minutes. I reckon.
Yeah, if they're real focused, mm-hmm. then 10 for sure.
There's a lot of replayability because there's a lot of chance. So it's just a lot of fun chucking dice, hoping for the best, and sometimes getting some really satisfying chain reaction combo things. We're like, I crossed off this, which gives me the ability to cross one of these things off, which means I get to do one of these, and then I get to use one of these, and so I'll use it, and then I'll get a billion points. So that's good old-fashioned Ganz Schön Clever.
And if they really like it, there's a sequel.
Called Doppelt Schön Clever? Doppelt von Clever? It has a German name.
Sure does.
By Wolfgang Warsch. Toot toot. Shalene?
Yeah?
What have we played today?
It's been a big day.
It's been, yep. Very big day. I like what this segment is called, but we did not play these games just today. We've been playing these games over the holidays. But yeah. We played them today, a few days ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there we go.
We can keep up the illusion.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah, you don't know anything about our lives.
You don't know our lives.
Yeah, listener.
Yeah, get off our backs.
So one of the games we played today... but not really. I gotta get off there. Was a game called Startups by Jun Sasaki and published by Oink Games, their lovely little colorful boxes. This was a very simple card game that was just a lot of fun, very cute. You are investing in stocks or like shares in various companies, but in essence, it was just a clever little card game.
Yeah, nothing too complicated about it. And we played it with lots of different groups. So it transferred into several different social situations, yeah, which was good.
We got it going in Christmas. We got it going with some people that spoke English as a second language, and it translated quite well as well. You play cards, and you either throw them away because you don't want them, or you add them to your shares. There are 5 different companies, or 6 different companies, and they all have a different number of cards. And if you have the most cards of a certain company at the end of the game, then everyone else has to pay you depending on the number of those same cards that they have. So you want to try and get all the cards, but you don't really want to get all the cards because if someone else doesn't have any of the cards, then you don't really get anything. So you have to be kind of sneaky and clever, but you always seem to kind of leave yourself open to get snuck up on right at the end, and I really like that.
Yeah, I think that was one of the trickiest things to explain, was that you don't want to actually collect all of them.
Yeah.
It's not a set collection game.
Yeah, yeah.
You just want slightly more than everybody else
yeah,
has.
Yeah, my dad went for literally every single one of the cards of the company and then was just upset that he didn't get paid by anyone. It was great. And that is Startups, published by Oink Games in their cute little box.
The next game we played was Shakespeare by R.V. Regal and published by
Ystari
Games. This is a game about making a play in a theater. I'm kind of a theater nerd, so I was quite excited to play it, but I was worried that it would be a little bit kitschy and too thematic to be a good game. I was pleasantly surprised. The mechanics work really well together, and there are enough different avenues of gameplay that not everyone is doing the same thing. All of the mechanics fit together really well, and I really enjoyed playing. And it's a lot of fun to try to figure out what kind of play you're doing, and to imagine your really well-costumed characters wandering around on a set filled with 2x4s and fog. I had a lot of fun playing it. And everybody that we've played it with also, I think, quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, so. And we've played this game with 2, 3, and 4 players. We brought it out for my parents and my mum, who's normally spends most of a game of this weight and length just being confused. Just had a really great time with it. So, yeah, Shakespeare was a really fantastic game.
Yeah, highly recommend.
Finally, a game that we played that I've been wanting to play for quite a long time is Aeon's End by Kevin Riley, published by Indie Boards and Cards and Action Phase Games, a cooperative deck builder in which you fight big, scary monsters. The main point of difference as a deck builder being that you never shuffle your deck. You just, when you run out, you flip the deck over, you slap it down on the table, and so when you buy cards at very strategic times, and so you're trying to build the perfect thing. I like parts of this game. I don't like the big scary monster artwork. I'm not scared of the monsters. I just don't care that much, I think. It's trying to look really badass, and that's just not my vibe. I don't know what else it would be, but I know I don't love that. It's fun. The first time we played the game, it wasn't fun because it was way too hard because we got the rules totally wrong.
Yeah, we
and
messed up.
Yeah, we set up the deck so that we were fighting some of the most difficult things right at the start.
I think we only lasted 3 rounds.
Yeah. And then after that, we set it up properly and it was a bit too easy. And then we played it again and it was actually quite fun. I want to try this game with more people, I think. We just played it with the two of us, and like, some things I really, really like about this game. The way that turns work is fascinating. There's a deck of cards specifically to tell you whose turn it is. So you flip over a card and, oh, it's player one's turn. Or maybe like the bad guy gets 2 turns in a row before anyone else gets to do anything. And that's really exciting. And
yeah, that part was cool.
Yeah. And makes it so there's this touch of chance that means that you can like hold out for having 2 turns in a row so you can cast all these amazing spells, and it's quite innovative, but I don't know if I love it.
It's okay not to love it.
I know it's okay not to love it, but I really wanted to love it.
I know that the mechanic of not shuffling your cards was supposed to be the new big thing, but I'm not sure that we got to the point of having a lot of cards that it mattered that they weren't shuffled.
Yeah, I feel like
we played one round with diamond clusters, and those, when they come up together, are good.
Mm-hmm.
But that was really the only example where I think it mattered that we weren't shuffling. Apart from that, I didn't really pay attention to what cards were coming when.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's been made the most of.
Well, but we haven't played with all of the different kinds of cards either.
Yeah,
maybe
that's
there
true.
Are cards we haven't tried yet that make it a lot more important, the order of cards. To sum up.
Try it out.
And continue copying Shalene. Okay.
Oh yeah, who was that? What were the games? It was Startups, it was Shakespeare, and it was Aeon's End.
Question 3.
This comes to us from rcrow2009. I run the board game club at my middle school, which is super cool, by the way, and I'm looking to up my collection some. Best game 2 to 4 players that lasts no more than 45 minutes that 12 to 14 year olds would like. The fewer small losable pieces, the better. They really like Munchkin and Exploding Kittens.
Well, Crow2009, it sounds like your group is into games that involve a lot of like, take that, and being a bit more combative over a more Euro-style game. So, I would like to recommend a game that I'm sure you've seen already, called King of Tokyo, designed by the prolific designer Richard Garfield and published by ILO. King of Tokyo, pretty straightforward. You're a big ol' monster, and you're in Tokyo, and you are trying to be the best big ol' monster, and you're gonna be doing that by beating the crap out of each other, and trying to score points, and gaining powers so that you can be better at beating the crap out of each other. It's just chucking dice, hoping for the best. It's like kind of like Monster Fight Yahtzee, really. And I think it's just good. It's good for that age group, and it's fun. Lots of laughs.
And if you guys really like it, there are lots of expansions for this. One of my favorites was costumes. You could put costumes on your monsters and it gave them different powers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So lots of ways to expand if it turns out that everyone really likes it.
Yeah. So King of Tokyo by Richard Garfield.
I noticed you didn't have any cooperative games on your list. And I think it's always a good idea to have a cooperative game on standby. So my pick for you is Magic Maze, designed by Casper Lapp and published by Sit Down. It's a cooperative game where you don't get to talk, actually, and it's played in real time. You're a team of adventurers, and you go into what looks to me like a mall, and you have to, what is it, get weapons?
Yeah, each of the characters needs to reach a certain space all at the same time.
Right. So the way that it works is each player is responsible for a different action, and depending on the number of players, you'll have more or less actions in front of you. So I might be responsible for moving people forwards and also picking stuff up. So we're all playing all the characters, sort of. Whenever you notice that a character needs to move in a direction that you control, you need to move that character. But you can't talk to anybody. So somebody might just be staring at you, and you know that means that they want you to do something with one of your actions, but you're not exactly sure what it is. There are different powers that you can use. So there are times where you can pause the game and sort of have a quick discussion. But as soon as the timer starts again, you're not allowed to talk anymore. It's quite fun. I've enjoyed it when I've played it. It's a bit of a puzzle as well. And I really like the mechanic of having different moves in front of you that you're able to do, and no one else is allowed to do those things. And then between rounds, you can shuffle those cards around.
Another good draw is if your board game club expands, it plays up to 7 people.
Yeah.
Which would be great, because everyone would just be in charge of one very specific thing.
Yeah, it's a good time. That's Magic Maze and King of Tokyo.
Yay.
Also, congratulations on having a board game club at your school.
Yeah, good job.
That's really neat.
Guess what?
What?
Have there been any games you haven't tried recently?
Yeah. Yes. There are literally thousands of games I haven't tried recently.
Maybe one of these games is a game you haven't tried recently.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about it, and you'll think, oh, that sounds like a good game. I should look out for that. Or maybe not good, but just interesting enough that it's worth my attention.
Oh, I don't think we're talking about games that aren't good.
I think you're right. But also, I don't know. I don't think the game that I'm recommending is fantastic. I think it does something really, really well and is worth a look.
Okay, so games that are worth a try.
Yeah.
Not every game has to be the most amazing game.
That's true.
Yeah, these games are good.
Yeah. This game in particular, in this segment called Games You Might Not Have Tried, is called Android Mainframe. And honestly, I've loved this game for a very long time, and it is so stupid. It is just so dumb, and it's fantastic.
Why is it dumb?
It's dumb because there's no... Okay, well, you know what? I'm gonna backtrack a bit, and I'm gonna talk about this game. So, all right. Android Mainframe is like that game when you've got a piece of paper with all those dots on it and you're taking a turn drawing a line, and if you make a box, then congratulations, you get a point, you get to write your name in that box. Only, instead of drawing one line at a time, you are using these cards that are from the shared pool that give you specific shapes that you have to make. So you're trying to use these hodgepodge shapes to completely encapsulate these tokens that you put on the board that represent who you are. And so if you completely surround one of your tokens, then congratulations, you get points. But the thing that makes this game ridiculous is that you put these tokens on the board, but other people can use one of these cards to just move one of your tokens away. Just move them anywhere, or maybe swap one of your tokens with one of their tokens. So you can spend a lot of time just focusing on building this really beautiful point scoring haven, and someone with just one action can like swap them over and steal all of these points.
But who would do something like that?
And it's so, that is why this game is so stupid, because there's no correct strategy. It's just trying to do something and hoping that other people don't screw you over, and they definitely will screw you over. And I love it. It's unlike anything that I've played. It has a lot of take that, and there are just no stakes. It's just...
Hey man, you don't always have to explain your love.
It's true. Yeah.
Love can just be love.
Yeah, this game called Android Mainframe by Jordi Jin and Gregorio Morales, published of course by Fantasy Flight, being in control of the whole Android IP. I think I've only played this and Netrunner. I've never played the classic Android game. Well, I like this more than I like Netrunner.
Agreed.
And people will probably fight me on that because there are a lot of people that say that Netrunner is like the greatest card game of all time.
No.
But we didn't like it.
No.
And so therefore they're all wrong.
Yes. They're very wrong. This particular thing is not subjective.
Well, remember how we had that fan?
Yeah. Bye. I also have a game for you that you might not have tried. Again, it's not the most amazing game, but I like it. My recommendation for you is Abalone, designed by Michael Lalette and Laurent Levi, and published by Abalone Games. Abalone is an abstract game. It's kind of cool. You start with marbles on the board. You have to move one marble at first, but then if you're going to push other people's marbles, then you can move multiple marbles. You can only push if you've got more marbles in a line than they do, and everything always moves in a straight line. If they have the same number of marbles as you do, then you can't push. And the goal of the game is to push 6 of the other player's marbles off the board. It's really simple. The rules are just basically what I've told you. I don't have the rulebook in front of me, so definitely consult it before playing. But the rules are simple, and it can be really tricky if you let yourself sink into it a little bit.
The pushing of the marbles is a very satisfying thing as well. The board itself is basically just the flat board with a bunch of divots in it that are all placed in a way that you can just boop, go over to the next. You know what I mean when I say boop, right, listener? It's just when you boop. So, boop.
Check it out, Abalone.
This is going to be our best episode yet.
Yep. I think that wraps up this particular episode.
Okay. End of podcast episode.
We're always very abrasive at the end.
I like to let people know where they are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then I guess we'll leave it there.
It's been a really, really, really lovely time communicating with you all. I hope your 2020 is off to a wild start, and I love every single one of you.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
And if you do send us a message, I promise I'll stop talking like this.
That's probably not going to do us any favors in regards to having fans. Sometimes I just feel like I'm screaming into the void and nothing is listening to me. Shall we answer some questions?
I think there's a couple things we have to talk about first.